So how are we doing?
Not bad, actually.
Seems audiences really like you high maintenance twits
for some reason.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, BH90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 6, The Long Wait. And I hear you host Tara Ariana and Sarah D. Bunny. See what I did there? It's great.
She's got bits. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
I actually am going to miss these high maintenance twits. They've really taken me on a journey.
I mean, they're better and like lower maintenance than the usual twits in their original form. So yes. Yeah, I'm going to kind of miss them too.
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk about it more, but we were saying yesterday on in our Slack how much they've really warmed up to these roles over the course of the six episodes. I mean, when we get to the end and they're like, well, we'll get to it, but it does feel like that maybe should have started from this point and then gone forward from here. I understand why they couldn't, but
yeah. Yeah. It's too bad. I was really getting the feeling in the back half that they were kind of like, they finally found what they were doing. Like they finally figured out what was the show.
Yep.
Oh, well.
Too late, probably, but we'll see. Yeah.
No, it's too late, baby.
Probably. Let's get into it. Here is this episode. The pilot is wrapped. Tori assumes it's going to be a smooth ride to a pickup, apparently because she does not read the trades and had no idea Fox also has a reboot of the OC in the works. Which nostalgic teen soap are audiences more loudly clamoring for? Tori tricks Christine's assistant into sending her the focus group feedback, which is instructive. Clip 2.
Tori's spelling is polarizing, but as Donna Martin, she is completely endearing, especially when she is with David Silver. Oh, polarizing.
Audiences related to Kelly Taylor's struggle as a middle-aged woman, but found her storyline depressing. Middle-aged? Depressing.
Steve Sanders' macho swagger feels old school, like being in a time capsule. Time capsule.
Andrea Zuckerman being gay or bi is pretty funny. Funny? What's funny?
Audiences think David Silver is now improbably sexy. Improbably? Really?
Audiences loved seeing Brandon Walsh and Kelly Taylor together, but were confused by the sexual chemistry between... Are you kidding me?
Confused by the sexual chemistry between Brandon Walsh and Brenda Walsh... Oh, well, that's just wrong. And they would like to see Brenda be more of a troublemaker. Ah, my God, good luck with that. Brenda wasn't a troublemaker. Kelly was. Kelly was a slut.
I love that they made her say Brenda Walsh.
Yep. All these years later, she'll still can't pronounce it.
Yeah. Chemistry. Amazing. Never changed Texas. Okay, elsewhere, Ian and Anna are still seeing each other, though he's dismayed that she wants to keep things NSA, no strings attached. Brian thinks that Ian, change it back to Steve, has a perfect arrangement because that is an extremely cool stance for a married guy to take. Ian actually wants to settle down and start a family. Anna admits that if she were interested in dating someone, it wouldn't be an actor because her mother is an actor. Hey, who's her mother? Someone Ian might know of? He doesn't ask, so it must not be important.
Nate has, shocking no one, sucked ass at doing all the unpaid domestic work Tori does on top of the labor that actually pays their household bills. Speaking of which, Nate forgot to pay their electric bill. Speaking of someone who recently messed up the internet bill because she thought it was on auto pay, but it wasn't, I am not Nate, and I resent the implication. Nate also hasn't tied anything up, which is another way I'm not Nate. Fine, this is not about me.
Jason misses most of the post-pilot wrap-up because he and Camille are in the Caribbean trying to reconnect. Apparently, she was on bed rest because you're allowed to get on a plane when you've been ordered on bed rest. JK, you're totally not, but fine. Jason is very attentive to Camille until she graciously releases him from his responsibilities and their marriage. Bye, girl. Now you can wear heels again?
At the same time, Jenny is learning that Wyatt is way too into her, alarming her by getting her initials tattooed over his heart. She ditches him just in time to find out Jason is also single.
Gabby finally tells everyone who might need to know that the woman she fooled around with is Christine. Jenny and Tori are all about it and very supportive. Gabby's husband, who apparently has a name, it is Chris, which classic Bev Niner name recycling. Why not just name him Phyllis? I ask you. Chris tells her he figured it out. He isn't jealous and she has to quit apologizing. However, when she says she doesn't know what she's doing, he says he doesn't know how long I don't know is going to be enough for him. She gets it and tells him he's her best friend, but then also kisses him, so we don't know either.
Shay tells Brian what we already figured out. She has sent a PI after Zach for his DNA to test. Then she tells him what we didn't know, which is that Brian is not biologically related to Zach. Brian is furious at Shay for getting in his business without telling him, but ultimately backs down since he knows that's the kind of thing she'd do to protect their family, and also that, as the much bigger star, she has more to fear from scammers if Zach is one. Brian feels bad since this isn't Zach's fault and he thinks Zach does deserve a father. Shannon tells him to be one then, since biology doesn't matter, which is very true.
That said, Brian does remember dating Zach's mother and shows Jason a photo of Brian with her at some event, asking if Jason remembers her. And Jason, who's in the background of the photo, does remember her. He might remember her very well, in fact.
Tori and Brian chat like the warm old friends they are about their marriages and about feeling unappreciated by their spouses. They both wonder if they should have married people who were better suited to them. You know, people, could be anyone, but then hug platonically because Jason and Jenny already have the old flames hooking back up plotline covered.
The pilot does get picked up, which means the cast gets to go to New York for upfronts. Ian runs into Denise Richards, finally, at a party. They hook up. Then he runs into her at another party Anna also attends, which is when we learn that Anna and Denise know each other because Denise is Anna's mother.
Oh, okay. I get it. However, that might not make that much difference in Ian's life in the long run. There are a lot of changes on the horizon for the cast, as we hear in clip 3.
First of all, we are going to entirely reshoot the pilot. So there's that. We are going to replace Anna because, let's face it, she was in way over her head. An entirely new guest cast. I'm sorry, Jenny. Maybe we can find something else for Kyler. And the network has no money. So we're going to be shooting in Canada.
Canada?
Now's not the time to get precious about zip codes, okay? And we can't afford to bring all seven of you back. But that's a conversation for a different day, right? So suck it up, get your asses out there, and sparkle.
I love her.
We have questions. So yes. the stalker really was the stalker that got arrested in episode 5. I realized at the end of the episode I was kind of expecting one more twist, and then there wasn't one. It was
Denise Richards still hadn't showed up, and it's like, how are they gonna tie her in, and why? Like, there are a number of people we hadn't seen. Scott was all over social. Excuse me, Douglas Emerson of the United States Air Force.
Yes.
I was like, is that really it? What a missed opportunity. Although if they figured like there's no one like past master of the cast that it could be that will make everyone happy, then we're just going to do it this way. Fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of agree. I also felt like they were tailing off the more outrageous soapy things as the season went on. So it's like,
yes, totally.
This storyline served its usefulness and now we're done with it. Moving on. Fine.
Yeah, I felt like they were doing that with almost everything. I felt like a lot of the things that I had been complaining were not necessary were getting thrown over the side at the end in the event that they got picked up. They won't, but I approve of that move.
Yeah. Well, and to that point, let's play clip 4.
Mom, you've never told me any of these stories.
Probably because they didn't happen or I blocked them out. Doesn't matter.
So We've been complaining all season about how they keep dropping these references to Jenny blocking out this or that because of her trauma of having worked on the show. And now if it's like, oh, she just doesn't tell those stories because she totally does remember them, but she knows she doesn't come off well in them. Like, if that's the way that they're going to deal with it, fine.
Yeah, my note was like, are we getting the backstory or not? If this is the way that they're going with it, where, like, I was feeling a little uncomfortable that what seemed to be a more serious, like, she's talking about dissociating, mm-hmm. was being treated as a joke.
Yeah.
That even she is like, what's a ray? I mean, not really, but you know what I mean. It was almost to that point that it's like, I don't, like, if something actually happened and she wants to work through it and talk about how hard it was for her, make a space for that to happen, maybe on some other show. But this is a good solution. Like, I just guess we're not gonna hear about it. I'm not rereading her memoir to mine it for information. Sorry.
I'm not gonna reread the one that she already wrote, but if she writes another one, I might read it because I'm so charmed by her portrayal in this series, I have to say.
I'm not as big a fan. It could just be a hangover of like dealing with her in the original iteration, but
sure.
Yeah, I'm not as charmed, but oh my God, Wardrobe loves her finally, and I can't argue with their work there.
No, true. I'm also not sure why they're ginning up Jenny's jealousy of Kyler's relationship with Shannon in this episode when Kyler is just getting dumped from the show within a show anyway, though.
Yeah. And my issue with that, you know, sing it with me if you know the words, like, this actually was not a totally off base portrayal of friction between a teenage daughter and her mom, but it will have been done better by many other shows in the interim, and B, it doesn't belong on this show. Like, this should not be a dramedy. This should be a comedy. This should have been Gross Point. And I think midstream they realized that, but they were stuck on the raft that they were on. That said, like, Kyler, oof. Nah, everything about it. The actor isn't good. They dress her like shit.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get to that too.
Yes, we will.
In light of our conversation last week about Brian laundering his real life deadbeat dadness through the Zach storyline for the air quotes Brian, having Zach turn out not to be related to Brian at all is just one last way to make it super gross.
And then we're supposed to think that he's actually Jason Priestley's kid? Like, can the boys swim or not?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, it's possible that they could back then, and now they forgot how.
Or, like, the fact that he was in extremely tight dungarees for until they started putting him in those giant khakis. Yeah, could have killed them off.
True. Shannon's whole thing to this point is how enlightened she is about everything, and yet she still says Kelly was a slut. That line really hit my ear hard.
Yeah, I felt like maybe they were trying to riff on how Kelly's so-called bad girl rep was always way overblown, and then the show sort of tried to retcon the retcon, but I shouldn't be giving it that much credit. And that was a weird thing to put in her mouth, of all people, but I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like there's a way they could have had her say that, like, that was semi-in character, like, Brenda-wise, where it was like, Kelly was supposed to be the slut, or Kelly's slot was the slut, or something.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I don't... And also, like, that has nothing to do... Like, if there was friction between the actors, like, make it about that.
Right. Yeah, they kind of allude to that.
She chose herself, like, I don't know, something.
Yeah. Good point. Although they are supposed to have established that Shannon doesn't know anything about the show from after she left, which, like, fair.
Yeah, true.
Good call. Finally, Jason and Camille's breakup is such a TV trope moment. Both parties, like, just mutually agree that they're done, and no one's feelings are hurt, as breakups go in real life approximately 0% of the time. This is, like, one of my biggest TV trope peeves.
Yeah, I clocked another one later on in, I think, the continuity section, but this one is not great. And also, like, you go all the way to the Caribbean when the problem we're meant to assume is that your baby is about to fall out of you. What better place to be than 30,000 feet? Not.
Mm.
And then you're just like chilling for a few days. And then you're like, yeah, you don't have to do this anymore. Let's get divorced. Like, eh?
Yeah.
As fine as I am with the end result, the route here was like, why not just outright kill her off?
Yeah.
I just don't get it. He really is barely in this episode, it felt like. Like, I had a note that was like, so he's just taking care of Camille? Like, what exactly was Jason Priestley actually doing?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That when Christine comes to the pop-up, the Peach Pit pop-up, and is like, she says something about Jason being on an island somewhere, but it's like so ADR'd. Like, I really wonder how this was Frankenstein together.
Yeah, and overall, in this season, he has been on... he's been around less,
mm-hmm.
which I'm sure has to do with, who knows, whatever the channel show is, or he just was like, this is dumb and I'll do it because it basically won't go without me, but I want you to give me as little as possible to do, which that's fair. I get
yeah.
it.
Yeah. He's the only one who is a series regular on a show right now. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
And he does actually direct stuff. So it's certainly possible, like, you know, that he had to shoot his stuff separately. Anyway. All right, let's break it down. Continuity cop, once again, lots to deal with here. The final cold open fantasy goes to Ian, who pulls up in front of the Peach Pit in his I-8A Ferrari car. Enters to tell young Steve, who they've like CGI'd his face to look less craggy, which I appreciated. Tell Steve to cut his ape drape, burn his belly shirts, and pay forward the legacy key, which, like, oh, those are the three things anyone remembers about him. Good yeah, job.
Probably.
When Ian hears about the OC reboot, he says that the OC was just a ripoff of 90210, and he's totally right.
Oh, it absolutely was. And the network marketed it that way without shame.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy to think it was only 3 years after the end of 90210, but it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's also crazy to think that 90210 limped along for 10 years, but oh my God, we are barely living proof that it did.
Might have been 4 years, I forget. I'm not going to look it up. Who cares? Yeah. The OC is bad. Tori's pilot money was already garnished for back taxes. I love that detail.
No. And then the again? It was so good.
We also get the red dress photo shoot story. So if you never watched the Lifetime movie or listened to our podcast about it, this was apparently a real thing. And when you see the DVD box, you can tell that it's true. But like for one of the photo shoots, there was conflict over two people showing up in red dresses, and like Shannon Doherty threw a fit about it. And according to Brian, as he's relaying the story in this episode to Kyler, it was like a fight on set for a couple of weeks and they were still like very young. So I buy it. But then it gets repeated at the end of this episode where they all show up for upfronts in red dresses, except for Gabby.
Yeah.
Who seemed to anticipate this, but I just want to add, everyone's 2019 red dresses. So cute.
Oh yeah. Very cute.
Even Tori looks good because it covers her chest.
She has actually looked, there's one outfit in this episode with the bows on the front that I'm like, you're crazy for this one. But overall, like, I've liked her outfits a lot too. She's been getting like slagged on Twitter for them, but I have enjoyed them. I think they're sort of like daffy and they go with her.
Yeah.
I like them.
I agree. That one outfit in this episode is bad. At the Peach Pit pop-up, and she does pussy bows more than I personally care for, but that's my issue. I agree. Her outfits have been great.
Yeah.
You know, she's a producer and it shows. She gets to pick the good outfits this time. Like, yeah, you should. Good call.
Word.
We also hear that one of Denise Richards' first jobs was playing Kelly's cousin, whom Steve hits on, which is the truth. And she doesn't assume that he remembers it. And who knows if he does. But yes, that was nice.
Yeah, I suspect that could realistically have been like IRL, one of those episodes, because it was the wedding episode, second season finale. And I can see the cast actually like drinking Because, like, it's crowd scenes and it takes forever and there's a million people around and they're like, well, we better drink this bottle of scotch before Dylan throws it at the side of the house. I'm still mad about that. Still mad.
Or, you know, that was iced tea, but someone had a flask because why not?
Sure. We don't have much for suspension of disbelief. And actually, this could have gone anywhere, including in questions. But when they're getting ready for the barbecue at Brian and Shay's house, and they're having a conversation about how he's still mad at her for hiring the PI. This is a classic TV. We courteously did not talk about this major issue between the last scene you saw us in and this one, which takes place a significant amount of time later. Like, this is like 2 days later.
Yeah. Yes. 100%.
It just bugs the shit out of me. And we've said this.
Usually on TV, it's like, you see the previous scene and then you see them like walking into another set and it's like, okay, you didn't talk about this on the whole car ride home, but this is like even worse because it's the next day.
I think we have said that this at least a dozen times about the original show, like when Jim picks up Brenda at the border.
Yep.
It's like he just fumed the whole way home and then he waits to unload on her at Casa Walsh. I guess maybe so he doesn't have to repeat the whole thing to Cindy. Yeah. It's very annoying.
Pandering to, this is not even to Gen X. It's just like you and me personally.
Yeah. I seriously think maybe at a certain point they were only doing the show for us.
If so, hey guys.
Hey, thanks.
Gabby is so stressed out about her sexual journey that she had to get a new bike guard after chewing through her last one. Hands up, who has a bike guard? At least two out of three people listening to this right now on producing the podcast. Hello.
Yeah, I should get one.
If your dentist hasn't said you need one, then you're probably fine. But, you know, people grind.
You think I can go to the dentist on my insurance?
Ah,
I'm American.
Sorry. We get Jenny, like she did in the pilot, once again walk into Tori's house and take her shoes off immediately.
Love it.
Calling out Brenda and Brandon's sexual chemistry, as we heard before, also a matter for the Lifetime movie, although giving Shannon a nightmare where Brenda and Brandon kiss is not okay.
No.
But the next happy place that she envisions herself in when she's meditating is a peaceful clearing with an owl friend, and it's pretty great.
And she also has mega extensions on, and that whole thing gave me a Charmed vibe, both because it was very kind of Wiccan in tone and also because it looked so cheap. Sorry, those extensions were seriously like floss. It was amazing.
They were, but it's clear like they're supposed to look fake. Yes, like all of it is fake. I loved it.
Yeah,
this is maybe just pandering to me, and we've, you know, already said I'm in love with Jenny and Sarah can take her leave her, but the end of Shannon's story about why she rescued a possum that was stuck in a hit and run, this is Jenny's response, clip 5.
Wow, you know a lot about possums.
Line reading made me laugh, but it really did.
That was very good. I marked that too. There's also yet another bit of business that made me wish that Ian and Shannon had more like just them stuff to do back in the day, because she's like flailing around explaining what happened and he like jumps back so that she doesn't get possum blood on his white shirt. It's the little things sometimes. That was good.
Yep.
The last one is Shannon telling Brian that if he doesn't know what to do, he should just not do anything, which is a classic Dave Sr. koan from my dad. Surely it's not original to him, but the way she phrased it was very Dave Sr. So
adorable.
Yeah.
Self-fluffing, not from the blondes. This is for Brian again. When the feedback is that he's so sexy, I mean, improbably sexy, which he takes objection to, but still. And having gone through these episodes for reasons that we will hear at the very end of this one, they keep showing him with his shirt off, of course, and in like these very low rise pants, and like in zero of them does it look like he's wearing underwear. Like, this is your wardrobe on the show. You're gross.
Yeah. Also, his bronzer is, he looks like a pecan with that, with like prison tats. It's not cute.
Finally, speaking of people's look, hazing the freshman. Oh, God, this poor girl playing Kyler. They dress her in so many bad outfits. But the one that she wears at the Peach Pit after dark, it's like this hot pink, completely shapeless, also another pussy bow situation. But it makes her look pregnant. And I'm sure this girl is not, because she's probably like actually, you know, 19. But I don't know why they're doing this to her. It's so mean.
Well, and she has a body like mine, which is hard to dress. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's a bag of potatoes with two much larger potatoes on the front. And there are certain things that you can do to, like, she seems to also be tall.
Yeah.
There are things that you can do, but it sort of reminded me of when they put Gail, like, it was obvious that they were putting Gail on Top Chef in the same, they're dressing her off the same rack as Padma. And I'm like, this is a professional person. You can't put them in the same dresses. It's not okay.
Yeah.
Padma is a model. Come on.
Yeah, this girl, it's like a lot of the outfits they're putting her in seem like they're references to the 90s. Like earlier on, she's very Cher from Clueless.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's like they're trying to make a point about her look in that respect rather than actually dressing the body that she has in a way that's flattering, like what not to wear UK version.
Well,
but
yeah, they also had like the deep V-neck that has a collar on it, like
yeah,
a couple of times. It's like, all right, I had some of these outfits and sometimes you just had to make do until, for example, belly shirts went out, because everything's a belly shirt on this guy. Mm-hmm. So I get it, but it really did seem like she has a completely normal, cute figure that they don't know what to do with. So,
yep. Well, she's going to a better place because it's over now.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Let's name our MVP. I feel like my pick is obvious because I've been tongue bathing her this whole time, but Jenny Garth.
Are we doing, is this just for this episode?
Let's do episode first and then we can do season. Sure.
For this episode, I am going to say it is Christine.
Mm-hmm.
Because she still having a ball. She has very funny line readings, and her outfit, that like dress with the studs at the neck,
mm-hmm,
is everything.
Yeah. She looks great. Agree.
She does.
Least valuable player for this episode. Nate, I know that Tori comes around on him at the end, sort of, and we hear that he just feels lost and he's jealous that she knows what she's doing and blah, blah, blah. But like, pay the bill, dude. Sorry.
Yeah. Solid choice. I'm going to go with Brian because he's a whiny bitch about, yep, Shay, that he's like, this was my thing and you interfered. And then also his acting was terrible in that scene where he's supposed to be really mad. He just looked like he had something stuck in his teeth.
Agree. Okay. Season MVP. Tori Spelling, completely Vanity 3 this whole time, is using the most of her real life for this character of everyone that we see. And I love that she is this committed to just going for it to make this project work.
That's also my pick. Christine Elise, a close second. But Tori has mastered stuff. She,
yep,
looked cute. Mm-hmm. She was willing to make fun of herself. And like she understands what her job is with this, and she does it. And the 6-episode subtweet at Dean,
mm-hmm,
front row popcorn, is me.
Yep, 100%. Least valuable player for the season. No need to belabor the point. We've said it so many times. Brian, pay your child support.
Yeah. And dishonorable mention to the writers who kind of let him whitewash that whole thing with this bogue storyline that made no sense.
Indeed. Finally, let's close up our reading from the October 1993 issue of Sassy, specifically the cover profile of Tori. The next day at the photo shoot, Tori walks in late. She looks like a totally different person. She doesn't have a smidgen of makeup on and her hair is like straw. Yikes. But it's not just that. It's that she seems completely devastated. She barely says a word to anyone and slumps over in a chair, gazing into space. The publicist, a new one who has been dispatched to accompany her for the day, explains nervously that Tori had a fight with Nick. It completely demoralized her, and she can barely hold a conversation with anyone. 2 hours later, Nick calls and tells her that he can't come over because he's going to look at a $2,500 Rottweiler puppy instead. She's furious. I give everything to him and he gives nothing back, Tori tells the publicist right in front of me. Why would someone do this? Hey, it's almost like this is a pattern in other partners that she has chosen later in life.
Yeah. Huh.
Eventually, Nick does show up and they have a huge fight in Tori's dressing room. I can see him through the half open door, pointing angrily at Tori, who's crying hysterically. I tell the publicist that Tori should get a new boyfriend and she agrees. Yikes. Finally. 20 minutes later, the publicist is fired. Just kidding. Tori emerges from her dressing room like nothing happened. She strolls back in front of the camera and immediately lights up, striking incredibly cheesy beach blanket bingo type poses. The second the camera goes off, she stares vapidly at the floor, listless and detached. She doesn't look happy. The end.
Ooh. Wow. Jesus.
Hey, well, I hope she's doing better now. I'll just say that.
Speaking of not happy, next time it's again with this Beverly Hills 902 edition. Remember that thing? We return to the Death March that is the final season of the original. Undead Jack McKay, Ryan's college agita. What's a Ryan? Good question, except who cares? And David interviews for a radio job in New York. LOL. Our visual aids are no laughing matter, however, and you can find those for every episode of Again With This, and compliments of Ms. Tara Ariano, a big old mega post from the entire season one of the reboot. Ooh. On our website. That's againwiththispodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. And if you want to make sure we don't have to shoot in Canada, you can support our Patreon at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm White Wine Budget Line Item Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Possum TED Talk Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Veggie Burger Shade, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beep-a-rooney.